NBA basketball fans, welcome back to the NBA Playoff Banter Podcast. He's Marshall, I'm Chris, and we're here to banter and discuss and debate and predict and review, recap the NBA playoffs. I mean, it's right there in the title, and boy, oh boy, do we have a lot to talk about. You know, this falls on a perfect Monday where there's no game. It feels like there's been a damn game ever since the beginning of the season, right? The schedule's been all crazy, but there's no game. And literally not till Wednesday, which I kind of like that for both sides, being that, you know, the Hawks and Bucks just got out of game sevens. There's not a game, you know, game one in that side, Hawks and Bucks, and then game two tomorrow night, Clippers and Suns. Pretty good game. The first, the Clippers put up a pretty good fight. Of course, Chris Paul was out too, but we're obviously going to get into the conference series. We know 1-0 for the Suns. We still don't know exactly. Oh, we know about Kawhi Leonard as far as he's got a fairly serious injury. So if he comes back, I really don't think he'll be anywhere near the same. With Chris Paul, it's just up in the air. You know, it's really up in the air. So I guess that kind of adds layer of suspense, but not as much, like I said, with the Kawhi thing. But we are going to talk through both game sevens. I mean, obviously, Saturday night, the Bucks get it done in overtime. And literally, I don't know what size shoe Durant wears, but if he was a 14 instead of a 16, or maybe a 15 and a half, they probably would have won that game with that three. And you could tell in his face, he was mad. He's like, oh, my God, I didn't hit the three. But a great, great game. Giannis gets over some of the mental stuff he's been dealing with. Speaking of mental stuff, Ben Simmons had an open dunk, decided to pass. I see that enough sometimes on the break when guys have an open lane and they kick out for a three, and it drives me nuts. But that one last night was just like, wow. So we're going to talk it up, right? I mean, both these game sevens. We did a show, what was that, Wednesday? And ever since then, pretty much all these games have, I mean, the weird, strange injuries, the freaking 20-point comebacks, you know, game tying shots, like all sorts of stuff went on these last chunk of days since the last time we spoke. So we're going to break it all down here on this here NBA Playoff Banter Podcast. Like I said, we're going to preview and predict, of course, the conference finals, which is every other day. Once this thing gets going on Wednesday, it's every other day. So they get this little buffer, the East does, but then they don't get any kind of two-day buffer. It's literally every other day, which is dope, you know, for a fan, no doubt about it. I'm sure they'd like some kind of two-day rest somewhere in there, just, you know, just mentally, if anything, physically, whatever. But if this is your first time listening to the NBA Playoff Banter, welcome. It streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropeadope radio. You don't have to go to blogtalk and ropeadope and download the show directly or listen to the browser. If you don't want, you can find this NBA Playoff Banter podcast under the Ropeadope Radio podcast on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Player FM, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spreaker, almost across the board. We're also part of the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network, which can be found damn near every place. While you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com. It's basketball, football, boxing, baseball, hockey, everything in between. And one more thing, if you're thinking about cutting the cord, or you have, you're not quite happy, I got something for you. It's called AT&T TV. The plans start as low as $69.99 a month. Simple pricing, no hidden fees, no annual contract. The cloud DVR is available. And if you sign up for the choice package or above, you get a free year of HBO Max. I've also seen recently AT&T TV. You can watch NBA Hoops on there right now for a charge. So check that out as well. Like I said, AT&T TV. Okay. I mean, where do you start here, Marshall, with all sorts of stuff that's happened? Obviously, you know, we'll get your first thoughts, but we want to start with back-to-back Game 7 stuff. And since, you know, we might as well start with yesterday's Hawks-Sixers game, But what have your thoughts so far? Literally since Wednesday or whenever the hell we did our show, it's been just night after night.
This has been one of the, I would say, better stretches of playoff basketball I've enjoyed. And that's from really having, like, no real betting interest, no Golden State interest, like, not a team I enjoy. Just been really good basketball. And I think that's welcoming from at least my perspective, because I know I'm not the only person who's been enjoying this, because you don't have your true major markets. Like, there's no LeBron, there's no Curry. Like, you don't have to always have the top dogs to have really good, enjoyable basketball. And I don't know the ratings of what they are of this past week, but like, they can't be bad. And I mean, and if you're the typical, well, unless it's a big market, I'm not going to watch. Well, then dude, suit yourself. You're not a true basketball fan. But this has been like really, really good basketball. And I don't, and this is no COVID thing. This is no race relation thing. This is just straight up, if you're a sports fan, you've been spoiled for the past handful of days just because you had a lot of great basketball games, and you had a couple of game sevens. You had a game six, which had the feelings of a game seven. So yeah, it's been really good. And I'm hoping, I keep seeing videos of Clay every week on a boat or doing God knows what. I'm hoping he comes back healthy next year, so maybe I can watch him and Steph put up a show like we've been watching lately. So I'm hoping my Warriors might come back next year. Who knows? I hope Clay is doing okay on his boat. But yeah, it's been a lot of fun to watch, Chris. We've had really fun basketball, and no matter what city is they're from, even though there's no Lakers or no Curry, it's been a lot of fun to watch, and I think we're going to hopefully get a couple more weeks of enjoyment from the NBA playoffs as well.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I saw a Booker and Thompson like meme out there. They kind of, I'll explain it later. I'm sure people have seen that on Twitter. It's like, hey, wait, that's the same person. Wait a second. Just the way they did his goatee, whatever. Anyway, you know, in that game yesterday, Atlanta on the road in Philadelphia gets the victory, 103-96. You know, Trae Young, 5 of 23, 2 of 11 from 3, really had a horrendous shooting game. Did get to the line, though. He was 9 of 11. He hit a pretty clutch shot near the end. Did get 10 assists. Had a lot of turnovers, but I thought he'd get a good – there was like a little scramble, kind of broken play that it looked like he was going to shoot a mid-range, and he passed at the last second for an easy dunk. You know, he did kind of the other stuff. Collins was very solid. Only shot six times, had 14 points and 16 boards. Capella had his moments. Obviously, Herter was a stud. Got to the line, but 10 of 18 overall, 27 points. And they were running plays for him down the stretch. Bogdanovich, who's been just a killer in this series and just overall, clearly, I mean, this is kind of the theme of the playoffs. Clearly, something's up with him. And it kind of makes you go, I mean, they got Gallinari. He came off the bench and hit some threes, no doubt. But it kind of makes you go, geez, I don't know. But, you know, so in a sense, dude, you made freaking Young shoot 23 to get 21 points. They shot 7 of 27 from 3. For their standards, just okay from the field. And I would say one way or the other, but I think we know how it happened. They lost. I mean, Harris shot a bunch to the Philly, you know, for Philly, 8 for 24 to get 24 points. That's not great, but he did make a lot of good crucial plays. Embiid was doing what he could do, considering there's times where he just off one leg and stuff. Curry's been, you know, shooting the three like a mother effer in this game. They didn't get a ton, you know, of help off the bench. And they had a dumb fall late in this game. But obviously Ben Simmons, you know, I mean, down the stretch, Ben Simmons in fourth. I mean, this guy, it's unbelievable some of the numbers that you get from this guy in the second half, like 1 of 1, 0 for 1 and 0 for 1. That's game 4, game 5, game 6. It's just – it's unbelievable, but when he passed up, Marshall, that probably dunk or at least reverse layup or whatever. It was open, dude. But he's afraid to get fouled. It's just, it's unacceptable. You got to take him off the floor down the stretch. And that's, you know, obviously the guy's a stud defensive player, and in the right system where he's more down low and a post player, like a point forward in a sense on offense, there's just no way he's going to give you much offensively. The scary part, though, we were talking about this earlier. Remember in years past, he'd bounce back with a 20-point performance. This guy's not bouncing back with shit when it comes to offense. He'll take like four shots a game. He'll be 2 of 4 and be like, dude, I shot 50%. I mean, you can't miss a shot that you don't take, right, Marshall?
Yeah, that statistically is true.
He shot 50%, bro. I don't see the problem.
In the fourth quarter of games 4, 5, 6, and 7, he didn't even take a shot. Like, I just, and it'd be one thing if you're like a defensive stopper, but you're getting paid a max contract to just be a defensive player. And it's just hard to fathom that the team decided, and that's obviously a financial burden on them now, that, dude, you're a vastly important part of the team, and we can't trust you to score. And I don't know where you go, because clearly it's not like this is some hidden secret. Everyone in the NBA knows that, hey, Simmons is a great defensive player but can't score. So your trading value of him is not as high as it should be. I mean, I'm sure people would trade for him, but you got to...
like a guard-heavy team or something that's like, dude, we have so many guards, you know, or something. Yeah. You know, it's got to be something like that. It's not easy, especially with another year now of struggling, and this is his biggest struggle. So you're right, the leverage is not in their favor.
No, and I saw on Twitter, and I think this is correct. I mean, this wasn't like a Woj tweet, but I saw that it said $140 million is owed to him in the next 4 years. So you owe this guy almost roughly probably $33 million a year. Like, dude, $33 million a year, roughly, for a guy that can't score. Like
at all. Like,
yeah,
at all.
Like, damn.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, hell, I'm not the biggest Embiid guy, but I'd respect him. And I can say that he did all he could. He was playing on a bum calf, a torn meniscus, which is a torn calf. He literally did about all he could. He made some good defensive plays. He made some blocks. He scored almost every game he had to. He actually hit threes. Like, hell, he had a better playoff than Jokic, or comparable. Like, you know, those were the top two guys both this year. I mean, Embiid did all he could have for his team. But you have a overpaid point guard, and it puts you in a weird spot. Because from a front office standpoint, or a team standpoint, you're okay, this dude's a, you know, some people mention the word all-star with him. Well, you can't call him an all-star. Because an all-star doesn't get paid $33 million to not score in the second half. So, I don't know. It's a weird spot for them. I'm not a Philly fan, so I don't care. But you do have to truly wonder if they're going to come back with the same team. Obviously, Embiid is their centerpiece. But what do you do with Simmons? And if you are to trade him, what are you trading for? Or what do you want to get back in return? Or what, you know, what's the situation there? And I still go back to, and I have nothing against the guy, but Tobias Harris, dude, you're paying him $27 million a year. Like, you have $60 million of two players, and neither are elite. I'm not saying that Tobias Harris is a joke and the guy didn't score in the playoffs. Like, he's not a hideous player, but he's getting paid, in my opinion, more than he is showing for a stat line. Like, he's not a $27 million
a year. How much is he making per year?
I swore he was making $27 million when they made the trade.
Dude, I gotta say, $27 million, especially with the rising cap, I think he's at his level. I don't think that's too much.
Okay. Well, nonetheless, I don't think he is as good of a star as they need.
He's not a true number two.
No, and clearly Simmons isn't either. So yeah, if you're Philly, You gotta look at Embiid and say, hey, okay, we got that. But what are we gonna do with Simmons? Because that is a situation where I don't think you can try out the same team again. I think you gotta look at a different scenario. Embiid is still definitely in his prime, and obviously
they tried to tweak it too, dude. They tried to tweak it, you know. Yeah, they tried.
It worked
during the regular season, but
yeah. So, well, that's one thing to kind of wrap up this Philly thing is honestly, defensively, they actually played pretty good. I'm really more blown away because, in my opinion, to tie these teams together, Atlanta, you can tell they're a young team. If you watch the games 5, 6, and 7, Atlanta has a lot of bad possessions offensively as a team. This is not a team that moves the ball like Golden State did in their prime or even Miami last year. This is not really that good of an offense. You have some talented players, but this offense honestly takes a lot of shitty shots, in my perspective. There's a lot of just like, well, let's come down the court and Trey or Bogdanovich or Herter are going to jack up three or Gallinari. Yeah. There's not that ball movement yet that you would see from a veteran team. But with that being said, this is also not a veteran team. This is a young team playing their ass off. So when you think, and at least again, in my opinion, when Atlanta's offense was not that great, really, Trae Young did not have a great game 7. So Philly's defense actually wasn't the issue. It's just that Philly couldn't score. Because defense, you can't tell me Atlanta's defense is not that locked down either. I mean, Trae Young is not a lockdown defender. Gallinari is an okay player, but by no means is he a stud. Like, Philly really
it's
takes
better
the blame.
Now than it was, it, but you're right. They're not a juggernaut.
So it just kind of makes you wonder, you just as a Philly fan, I'd be like, dude, what WTF? Like, how did we blow this? But when you watch game 7, to tie this all together, there was never points in that game, Chris, where I thought that this thing is done. Like, Philly's got this. Like, there was moments in the series where Philly would, like, come out on the court and you're like, oh, my God. Like, dude, this Philly team is, like, a level above Atlanta.
Well, 2-1, I felt pretty confident.
Yeah, and after they lost game 1, you saw them come out in game 2, and they were up, like, 40-19. And you're like, right. Oh, crap. Like, okay, I know Atlanta, y'all were cute. You won game 1, but, dude, it's not happening again. But Atlanta won 3 games in Philly. So it'll be fun to see in the offseason because I would bet $100 that, okay, Philly's going to trade Simmons or at least put out the searchers for him or the put out the resume. Because, yeah, as a Philly fan, I don't think you want to see that again. Obviously, the front office knows it too. Hell, they even asked Doc, what can Simmons be the point guard on a championship team? He's like, I don't know what to say at this point. You know, so
they were trying to. There was talk about Doc wanting to trade him for the Timberwolves' number 1 pick and get LaMelo last year.
I don't know. Again, I'm not a Philly fan. I don't care. But you gotta try something different because you clearly have a nucleus of success, but your playoff success, you've yet to make an Eastern Conference Finals for, I would say, legit, for sure, the third year in a row fans expected it.
And you're pushing it. You're pushing it to game 7s and all this stuff, you know?
Yeah.
But so, you're not getting over the hump.
And hey, for Atlanta, dude, this is such a – I remember I talked about this on the last podcast. A majority of teams have to go through growing pains before they get to a title or make the finals or win a finals. This is such a great amount of growing pains for them to go through just because this is a bunch of experience that Trae Young and Herter and Bogdanovich and Hunter, they all get. That they can use towards next year as they grow up and all develop to become a better team that takes better shots. Like, this is such a huge piece. Even if you get swept by Milwaukee, I'm not saying they would.
I was going to say, it sounds like you got them losing 3-0. Like it's not even going to get to the fourth game.
This is, yeah, well, who knows? But this is just such a big, like, dude, yeah, we thought we'd be here. Man, this is a great confidence builder for the future of the Hawks.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And just taking it back, March 1st, Nate McMillan pops in. Toronto is 17-17. Boston is 17-7. The Bulls are 15-17. Atlanta is 14-20. March 1st. It's unbelievable what they've done. And, you know, we go back a few years here on Trae Young. in the second half to his Oklahoma Sooners season, some of those games were just downright awful. His shot selection, just every, it was just like, dude, okay, we get it. Stop taking 29 shots. It's college, dude. And, you know, there'd be times where he'd be, you know, over volume shooting, right? But he got a chance to close a season with a squad that was glued in, playing better defense. You're right. It's a super streaky offense. Because you look up and you're like, whoa, what the? Just like that monster dunk from Embiid last night. Boom, they're right back down, easy bucket. Crowd shuts up. You know, like, it's just like, whoa, what the hell? Like, they are streaky, but you're right. When you look at the scores, how many, you know, what they scored, Philly did a pretty damn good job defensively. That is correct. It's a good call. But back to Trey, you know, Trey Young, like, the second half of Oklahoma, the guy got a lot of deserved criticism. Some of it was over the top, like he wouldn't be shit in the league or something like that. Just the style of play. And obviously people saying this guy thinks he's Curry because, you know, takes a bunch of dumb shots, but Curry, you know, you don't call those dumb shots with Curry. And even in the league, he's been like that, but, you know, he shut up a lot of critics, and the dude's a killer, and he wants the moment. Last night, he wasn't shying away, sitting at 4 of 22, made some couple passes. You know, he's just, he's a little workhorse, dude. He's a spark plug. And the guy is obviously a pretty damn good scorer at that, right? And he can pass too. So they definitely have – they can even tweak some. Like, is Collins going to be happy now? Shit. At, you know, when they're sitting at 14 and 20 or whatever the hell it was, Collins was on the block. I mean, the Timberwolves were knocking on the door trying to get that guy, which, oh, my God, I wish we had Collins next to Towns. But that's not going to happen anymore. I don't think he'll – I mean, he may ask for too much money and they'll move on or whatever, but sure. They got a good blend of some veterans, but veterans who are taking more of a leading role here too. Because look at their big man got played off the court in Houston, and we're going to talk about that too with Utah here soon, and maybe that's a good example of, well, Houston at times had to go small, and it worked for him, and that's why they traded, oh boy. Now, he's fitting better in, you know, with Atlanta, but I gotta say, Trey Young, dude, I'm talking about Capella. I forgot to say his name. Capella, you know, he's blended in really nice there, but and him and Collins make up a nice low post presence. But Trey Young, you shut up a lot of critics, so good for you, man. Good for you, no doubt about it. I mean, that was something. All right, so game 7 on Saturday night, Bucks get it done, 15-11. You know, Giannis was starting to get the ball a little closer to the hoop, right? He went for 40. He definitely went off. You know, he was just being more assertive. Still was a little off, 18 of 14, but he went to the line 14 times and took 24 shots. So he was being assertive because Middleton's shot was off. But, man, that was a fun-ass game. And obviously, you know, Decoy Harden out there did look a tad better, but really wasn't getting much lift. He was able to drive and get fouls. He was 10 of 10 and did get, you know, from the free throw line, did get 9 assists and whatnot. But, you know, Durant goes for 48, the most points scored in a game 7 ever, coming off a brilliant game. But this time, well, you know, he shot 36 times. 17 of 36 is a good percentage, but you don't really ever want anybody on your squad having to shoot 36 times, Marshall. And, you know, they did – it wasn't just Giannis on them, right? They did blend some stuff. Obviously, it didn't matter, but it was two separate games to get to 48 when you had to shoot 36 times. But, like I said, literally, if he had 15 and a half instead of 17s or whatever, you know, shoe size is, we're talking about Brooklyn being in the conference final. But what do you say about Giannis in a sense? Now, we talked about this off air. It's not a perfect example. It's not a perfect comparison. But We know the Lakers, AD was, you know, wasn't in some of those games. He wasn't healthy. LeBron wasn't 100%. Whatever. The Suns got over the hump, and once AD was out, they took care of business. It's kind of like a solid stay busy fight. If you have that in boxing in front of you, you should take care of business and dominate. And that's exactly what the Suns did. They didn't worry about who wasn't in the game or not. We're going to dominate. And we saw that with Milwaukee, though, right? We saw that with Milwaukee with no Harden. And to think this was 2-0 in that second game, the way they got their ass kicked, it didn't look good for them. Now, I'm bringing both those things up because we said, you know, this just beating LeBron and the Lakers mentally gives you an edge. How do you think this transfers over? Now, we know Harden wasn't 100%. We get it. Kyrie got hurt in game 3 or game 4 or whatever. Is this enough mentally to get them over the hump to not mess up against Atlanta? Because 5 games ago, it looked bad, but they willed themselves, and they do have better role players. They play great defense, really. I mean, it still was only a 111, you know, with Brooklyn in overtime. I got to give them credit, man. Because when they were down 2-0, it didn't look good. Do you think this could carry over for this squad and Giannis especially, who was making sure to be aggressive this, you know, down the stretch of these last couple games?
I think that the mental hurdle they jumped over when they beat the Heat has just kind of carried over now. Like, there was lots of talk of, will this be a repeat of last year? And they just dispatched the Heat. And now you went into a series where you were a slight underdog. It wasn't by any means a miracle upset, but you were definitely a dog.
Especially down 2-0.
Yeah. And you had some injury luck go your way. But hell, again, that's NBA playoffs. That happens. Again, if Klay Thompson knows tears ACL, we might have won another ring. Like, you just, it sometimes it screws your team. Sometimes it helps your team. You don't know. But yeah, I think this is another big hurdle just because now you're in the Eastern Conference Finals. Like, for the past probably 3 to 4 seasons, I would say the media every year has always thought that Boston, Philly, or Milwaukee has a chance to make the finals. And those three teams really haven't done it at all. And now a team actually made it to the Eastern Conference Finals. Like, Milwaukee actually got over that hurdle. So I think this is another mental block which they've achieved, and I think they're now playing a team that's easier than they just faced. I could be wrong on that, but you beat your team from last year. You beat a star-studded relative team this year, and now you're playing a young Atlanta team. Like, I think this is another big hurdle in the way that they jumped over, and that was despite one of the worst inbound drawn-up plays I've ever seen. With the game on the line, and there are like 2 seconds left in the shot clock, and you have Brooke Lopez catch the ball on the 3-point line and appear not to even know the game situation. I mean, some of Budenholzer's play is drawn up at the end of the game. Makes you wonder, like, dude, what are you doing?
Yeah, they don't have time for that, you know, that type of thing or whatever. You don't want that. Yeah, you're right.
Some of his... And this is a guy that's been ripped for different reasons, but his late bounding in his drawn up late play games or late game plays are just absolutely atrocious. And you know, so it's one of those
and where they get the ball to Giannis is just like, really, dude, this is what we're doing this.
So I don't think his X's and O's are the equivalent of a Spoelstra or a Popovich or, you know, of a Carlisle. Yeah, I don't know. Whatever he does for X's and O's is scary, but his team won. And actually, to flip the head coaches, this is one thing, and I've not heard many people say this, so I guess this is kind of my original hot take here a little bit, but a massive, just stupid shout out to Steve Nash. This dude, you're telling me that you cannot have given Durant at least 2 to 3 minutes of rest. You cannot tell me that if you brought in like Landry Shamet for 2 to 3 minutes throughout the game, that you could have not arrested Durant. I get maybe letting him play all game 5, but or game six, whatever. Like, but dude, yeah, game five. Like, dude, you couldn't rest him for a handful of minutes. And again, and
could they have though? I mean, are we sure they could have?
Yeah. Well,
if, they weren't scoring much with him. They weren't putting up 120 something, you know, down the stretch.
I just don't see how
he was literally.
And again, I'm not a Durant guy, but that dude played phenomenal. Like, he was giving this all the whole game. But you can't sprinkle in, like, okay, there's a minute left in the third quarter. Let's call time out and, like, let him, like, even a couple of minutes. Like, even though it's small. Like, I mean, Durant checked up that air ball, which was not a representation of how he played that game. But, yeah, the dude played almost three straight games and he was in overtime. Like, and you could tell everyone was tired in overtime from the way they were shooting the ball in that overtime, both teams.
Yeah, but especially Durant.
Yeah, really, but I really wonder if Nash, just because, again, and if your team is that bad, you can't sit him for 1 or 2 minutes, then you really got to look at your investment of the whole team. But I just, looking back, I'm like, dude, you, I get one game, but you played him for a full game seven and a game. Like, I didn't just quite get how you can't sprinkle in, even if it is, if the ball goes out of bounds or a foul is called and there's 45 seconds left in the quarter. Okay, dude. Come out for 45 seconds. We can milk the clock for a possession. Like, let Harden pound dribble and give it to, you know, Jeff Green or something. Like, I don't know. But in fairness, Nash is a first-year coach. Like, you know, this is probably the bumps and bruises he gets. Or he also had a timeout in his pocket when Durant was staring at him with 9 seconds left in the game, and you see Durant just kind of chilling out there. Like, again, why not call a timeout? It lets you drop a play, lets the guys rest. I don't know. I give Nash.
I'm in more of favor of that one, what you just said.
Yeah, I just give Nash a low letter grade for not finding any time to sub him and not calling some, and even Nash's inbounding plays were not glamorous. So that, and my other point to the Nets, and I'll throw it back to you, was Joe Harris had a really bad series.
Yeah. That wasn't just a one game thing like people were saying, right?
No. From, like, games 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7, like, he only had, like, one game that was good. And this is a guy we've talked about all year, Chris, who's had a really easy gig because you pretty much had to be a spot-up three-point shooter all season because you play guys that are not really guardable by one man. And there was that play, Chris, near the very end of the game where it was a tied game, and the ball, I think Durant went in for a layup and either got blocked or deflected, and it came back to Harris, and it was a perfect spot up three with no one near him. If he hits that, they probably went. Not they possibly could have won, and he bricked it. And he had a really, really poor series. And, dude, you're not expected to be a defensive stopper. You're not expected to dribble the ball. You're legit expected to hit threes, and you didn't. Like, I don't know. And for Durant, like, and I love to rip him because I normally do, but he showed that when he's on, he's impossible to guard because of his height.
We've known that for a decade.
He did about all he could, and it wasn't enough. And Harden admits after the game, dude, I was playing with a grade two hamstring. Like, and Harden, I thought, probably did all he could for what he could offer. You know, so
how they weren't exploiting him when they Giannis and Harden at the post. And, you know, Harden's actually not a horrible post player on defense.
No,
he's really not. It's weird to say that, but he's really not. But still, dude, Giannis is 7'8", dude. Like, fucking dribble down on him and fucking dunk it on his head. He's got a fucking hammy, dude.
Yeah. My last thing from Milwaukee is Middleton. Truly showed up in that game seven for a guy who, you know, him and Holiday were kind of at times in the series. I thought kind of,
yeah, especially at the right times.
Yeah.
Took a bunch kind of shots, like, didn't shoot great, but he made clutch when they needed.
Like, Giannis was taking a lot of love and hate for better or worse. And Holiday kind of had moments of disappearing, and Middleton at moments was here and there. Middleton hit a lot of huge shots along with P.J. Tucker in quite a few corner threes and doing all he could on Durant. So those, we talk about Joe Harris kind of let the team down, and I know that Middleton makes more than Joe Harris, but Middleton and P.J. Tucker were the positive additions a team needed for their superstar compared to Durant, who needed obviously a little more help than he was offering.
Well, and, you know, obviously the help wasn't there. They didn't let them down. They just weren't on the court or not
healthy. Yeah.
But Middleton, you know, it's not something new. He's been a solid player. He's been solid. And Holiday can defend very solid. He's going to have his hands full, obviously, against Trey for this series. We'll kind of blend into the conference final. Might as well, since we've been talking East a lot anyway. We will get to the West in just a second. But breaking this down, it starts Wednesday, so it is nice that they have a little time off. I thought the Clippers kind of got screwed. They played the late Friday game and then the afternoon Sunday game. But this is how the NBA is this season, so I get that part about it. But that kind of sucks for them. I remember we're just going to go off something else. But, yeah, Middleton's been solid. He's averaging like 23 in the playoffs, 23.3. I'm looking at it right now, actually. 8 boards, 4 assists, steal and a half. Whether it's shooting, whether it's driving, whether it's backing somebody down, hitting a fade, he's a solid clutch player. And, you know, Holiday isn't afraid to guard someone, and he can go off. Lopez is pretty damn solid. Obviously, Forbes can hit the three and do something off the bench. And obviously, P.J. Tucker, the mentality of P.J. Tucker, he can get you – he's not even what he was in Houston. He doesn't even really shoot threes, really. But he's adding to, you know, he's adding to their – it's taken away Giannis having to guard people the whole – like big chunks of the game. Now, sometimes you think, all right, dude, but Giannis is 7'8", so put him on him down the stretch. But I like the role players better than I had previously. And Giannis did, you know, we were saying, is this guy a top 5 player? Are we sure? Are we 100% sure? The last few years, regular season and some playoff games, no doubt about it. Clearly, he's been either MVP-ish or MVP, you know, the guy's a stud. But when you start to do some of the stuff he was doing in these playoffs, last year in the playoffs, the first couple games in this individual series, it just kind of makes you scratch your head and go like, dude, if this keeps going, you might fall out of the top 5. I hate saying that. I think it sounds like blasphemy, but dude, there's been times where it's like, you got Blake Griffith on you, dude. What are you doing? You know, like, so anyway, long story short, going into this one, they still need to continue to get the ball in the post, high post, elbow, low post, whatever. Just inside the three with his back to the basket to an extent. Doesn't always have to be back to your basket, obviously. But looking at the shot distance, the average Giannis shot difference through 6 games, right, in this last series. Game 1, 10.1 feet. Game 2, 11.2. Game 3, 12.2. It's like, dude, you're getting further out there. Then game 4, 8.9, 9.2, game 5, and 5.6 game 6 when he really exploded. And, like, as far as what you need, you know, to do. I mean, obviously, you know, there was stuff that went on, right, in these games and all that. But I just like their grittiness now. And they just have more playmakers on both sides of the ball. I can't sit there and call for like Atlanta's going to win a road game, dude. They're just going to. You know what I mean? They're just going to. But then again, they may lose on their home floor. So I actually think that Atlanta could push them to 6 or 7. But I'm going Milwaukee, the Milwaukee Bucks, to go to the finals. That is what I'm saying. But this whole 5-game stuff, I mean, sweep, just get it out of your mind. I don't know. I mean, one out of the first 3 games on the road, they're going to win one of those games in my mind. So that's why I say 6 or 7.
I'm going to take the Bucks in 5. I just think that there's too many defensive issues Atlanta cannot answer. You pretty much got by playing a Knicks team who had one offensive talented player and flashes of Derrick Rose. Then you just played a Philly team who had, Embiid, and then you had flashes of Tyrese Maxey and Curry. Like, I now if you're Atlanta, you actually have to play a team who has three guys that can score, I would say, relatively at ease for NBA standards. And then you have, you know, some spot-up shooters like a Brook Lopez. I just think that Atlanta is going to have to, like, I mean, Gallinari is probably going to have to guard Middleton or Antetokounmpo, which is really scary, like, to me, just from a NBA prediction assumption, because Gallinari by no means is a lockdown defender. So I just don't see where the stops come from, because you for once have to play a team that's going to freaking score on you. Now, if Milwaukee wants to run, which they love to do, and Atlanta wants to run, if you play more of a pickup, go, you know, up and down the court game, I think you're in a good hands. But if Milwaukee makes it a half court set, I just don't see how they get their stops. So yeah, I'll take Bucks in five. Now, Budenholzer could botch the crap out of this, and I could be wrong, but I'll take Milwaukee in five.
Now, looking at a third quarter with the LA Clippers and the Utah Jazz, they both took 21 shots in this third quarter. One team was 8-21. The other team was 15-21. The Clippers 41-22 in that third quarter. Paul George, when he is, you know, we talked about this off air, when he's the number one option on offense, he's just a different guy. And obviously, man came through, no doubt about it, right? We know all that. You know, they actually played a pretty competitive game. He didn't do much in the first game of this Western Conference Finals against the Suns. But, you know, Westbrook does, I mean, obviously he spreads the ball because the guy is up there and assists every year. So, and I bring that up, you know, with that year in Oklahoma City, because look, dude, he fucking had like an MVP year type year. But whatever it is, dude, like whether it's they need a point guard that can get Leonard and George more catch and shoots, even a couple more during a game or whatever it is, it's not a great blend, right? Obviously. It's a very good blend that looks great at times, but it's not a championship level, you know, mix for whatever reason. But when George is the guy like he was in Indiana, I don't know what it is, dude. I don't know what it is, but he just turns – then it's playoff P. And we got it. I mean, he's gotten a lot of shit, and rightfully so, right? But, man, I mean, the way he dominated these games and for the Clippers in general as a franchise, you forget this team that they built. Just in general, you know, the conference final has eluded them. And then obviously, Ty Lue switching to a small lineup was a difference maker. Terrence Mann scored 30 of his 39 points on Rudy Gobert as a primary defender. Mann is the third player to score 30 versus a single primary defender in playoff games since the third player to score 30 since 2014. And I think he's the only one that shot 80%. Mann was going off, but. And I know you want to talk about that. That small lineup came in handy. I don't think it's going to be as handy in this one. We even got some boogie action going on, too, for the Clippers. But I got to give it up to the Clippers, dude. They found a way to get the job done. And, you know, I thought Utah would win, especially with no Kawhi. And they answered the bell, dude. I mean, it's crazy to me to think that, like, they didn't even need to go game seven, Marshall. It was done in six.
I don't even know where to go on this one. There is this NBA adage, which I guess you notice just from watching basketball like you and I do, of when a star player gets hurt, the initial reaction always is to say, oh, God, the team is screwed. But what you'll notice, Chris, in small sample sizes is when said star player goes down, sometimes the offense for a while, not a full season, but for a while, can spread the ball more and more people feel like they're part of the offense. You know, like
and they don't have this shit on tape either.
Yeah. Right? And like, let's say LeBron gets hurt or Curry gets hurt, like in Kawhi got hurt. Like anytime a stud goes down, okay, guys, like let's prove people wrong, and hey, let's spread the ball more. And again, now this is for a small sample size. For a regular season, the Clippers would be screwed. But for this short sample size, it worked out to be phenomenal for them. Like they became a team that was passing the ball, and it, like I said, it also gives other people time to shine. Terrence Mann was not expected to score 39 points in a closeout game. But with Kawhi off the court, different people in different places, the dude erupted. And if you're a Jazz fan, you got to be fed up or upset, at least upset with Quinn Snyder. Because I remember we talked about it last year. They were two quarters away from winning that series 4-1. And he took the foot off the gas. He brought in the subs. Denver won game 5, and then Denver won 6 and 7. And in this series, you had your foot on the throat again. And what really came to bite you, and this is really a argument between sabermetrics people and people that you could say watch the game and don't look at numbers, was the Rudy Gobert decision. And again, I get that he got voted Defensive Player of the Year, but I think that can be misleading because the way Utah sets up their defense is...
Oh, it can be misleading, dude, because Garnett should have got it 3 other times. Sorry, go ahead. I digress.
His main purpose is to protect the rim, which nowadays in basketball makes sense because teams nowadays love to do dunks, layups, close shots, or threes. Okay, or everyone's following there. But when your main goal is to cover the rim, and the man you're supposed to be guarding is on the three-point line, that's a massive problem, especially when he continues to bust three after three after three. And in fairness, that's not even Gobert's fault. Gobert's not expected to guard a guard who's 6'2" when he's like 6'10", 6'11", because he does not have the footwork to match them. Now, they're not going to probably, well, and hell, man did even dunk on his ass. But normally you won't get dunked on. But even watching the Scott Van Pelt highlights after that game, of like 4 of the threes they showed in the highlights in that second half, 3 of them were Gobert leaving the basket to go cover his man. And the guy, well, pun intended, and the guy hit 3 after 3 after 3. So if you're witnessing a 25-point lead, yes, a 25-point, 3 minutes into the third quarter lead evaporate, you have to change something. Like, sometimes these coaches, and who knows, obviously Quinn Snyder knows a lot more than me, but even I would realize, dude, your Gobert is getting shot on like every single time and they're not missing. So why would you not put in favors or put in a different pick or try a different lineup or go small ball with them? Cause who on the Clippers was like, Zubac ain't going to drop 30 on you. Zubac ain't going to jack 3, but they refused to take out Gobert. And now you're bouncing out the series. And again, in a game where, I could have understood if they lost. But if it was a close game, but Jordan Clarkson, who I've liked, cause I've always liked Mizzou, cause my best friend went there. Clarkson went like Michael Jordan on the game in the second quarter, but you'd forget that. I mean, Clarkson scored 17 in a row, was untouchable.
Yeah.
But that feels like a past memory from a year ago. Cause in the second half that literally, and I'm not a Clippers fan at all. But even I was getting goosebumps because that arena was going nuts. It was the first game they've had fans at all year. It had a college basketball atmosphere mindset. And literally every corner three that like Mann or Beverly or like Paul George was pimping and staring down, they were hitting them. And that place was going nuts. And you had that feeling when it cuts about 7 or 8, Chris, in the back of my head, I'm like, dude, they're going to win this game. Because in the start of third quarter, I was in my group chat. And it was going from 22 to 25, and they poked it down to like 15 to 16. And Jazz hit like a layup. I'm like, dude, they might. You start to feel as a sports fan, you know, you have those moments, Chris, where you're like, if one thing or two things go right here, you know, and you start telling yourself that, and that you could just see the momentum just change. And they had swagger. The arena was going nuts. They refused to take Gobert off the court. And now for the second year as a Jazz fan, you got to be really upset. Got to be somewhat pissed at Quinn Snyder. And you got to realize, well, what are we supposed to do? Like, do we make changes to our roster, or do we fix the Gobert thing? Like, there's a couple. What would your reaction be as a Jazz fan? And do you think they bring back the same squad, or maybe consider a different coach or a different Gobert option? Or what's your take, kind of how they would feel after their postseason?
I'd still be mad that the Timberwolves swept them 3-0, but that's just me.
So what you're saying is Ty Lue watched the Timberwolves game.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. That's all he did. Right. I mean, it's pretty basic stuff here. I got to say this. Clearly, their best player down the stretch is hurt. He looked pretty good when he got back in, though. You know, he did. Conley was out good chunk of the series.
Or that the really playoffs. Hurt. Yes.
Maybe they win one extra game before he came back. Now, I know he was in the end of the series, but it's funny because Gobert gave up a backdoor fucking going to Chase Towns on the three when there's already somebody out there and let D'Lo go backdoor for a game-winning layup with like a second left. I'm not trying to, rip on Gobert, but I'm ripping on Gobert. And that's just bitterness, from a guy that is a damn good defensive, is a difference maker, all that stuff. Sometimes, especially nowadays, you get played off the court. It is what it is. I'm just bitter that KG only got one defensive player. That's all it is. But rightfully so, too, by the way. This is bullshit. I'm still pissed. But, no, you know what? I don't think they will. They're the number one seed. They didn't have Conley. I could see they've already done some blending and trading and all that stuff. I can just see them saying, you know what, dude? We're going to run it back because we didn't get our chance to be healthy in the playoffs. We're going to run it back. That's what I think. Real quick, saw this on Twitter. Ben Simmons is doubtful to play in Australia for Australia for the Tokyo Olympics. He's got a broken jumper. That's what they say on Twitter. He's got a broken jumper. So he said he's going to, obviously be training to Doc's already saying that he's going to turn he's dedicated to shoot more or something. I don't know. Who knows? His jumper's so ugly, dude. I think they'll run it back. I think they'll run it back. To be honest with you, I think they'll run it back. Let's get on anything else, because we do kind of got to get to this next series and shut this puppy down. Anything else with the Jazz? I think they'll run it back. I really do.
Okay. I just think you really got to look at, kind of like the Budenholzer thing. Like, if your regular season approach gets you success in the playoffs, sure, awesome. But do you have the mindset of being able to switch it when it does matter? Because clearly, and I know we've hammered this point, but it's a point to hammer. Because half of Twitter will say Gobert is this defense player, but I think you really have to just say, okay, I know that the guy's been our cornerstone this year, but when you see it shot after shot, it was like it would just had to be either stubbornness or a message from the front office or something. But it just seems like if the whole world, even the announcers, like who normally never really, get on people, they're like, dude, Gobert's getting exposed. Like there had to be some reason why Quinn Snyder in the back of his head is like, gonna keep him out there. Gonna keep him out there. Right.
Something we don't know about him mentally, that he thinks he's going to lose Gobert or something. I don't know. Because you're right. It had to happen. Just like I was talking about Capella a couple years ago, they had to fucking get him off the floor, and they had to trade him. They literally traded him, So.
Yeah, and that's why. And last thing is the Donovan Mitchell, he has moments where he shoots like Curry, but doesn't quite make the shots like her. And he's still young. He is. But there's moments
where with the best shooter off the dribble of all time and compare that. Shot 40% from three this year or something like that. I mean,
I just think that his late game shot selections.
There you go. That's a good way to see it.
He gets a little haul. He gets like NBA Jam mode. He starts jacking. But and again,
he gets a little Trae Young, is what you're saying?
Yeah. He gets those moments where you're like, you dude, that's like from 38 feet. Like, so yeah, you're right. I'm sure they'll bring the roster back, but I would just maybe retwerk the defense. But yeah,
fucking well, maybe anyway. Having Conley out there would get him more catch and shoot, so he doesn't have to make, you know, true, make it all a lot of himself. But yeah, I mean, you're right. He does shoot him pretty damn well, but you're right. They ask him to volume shoot so far, you know, because he does. He definitely does. Yeah. But he's not just a volume shooter per se, because usually those guys shoot low percentage.
That's not true.
First game, obviously still no Kawhi. Clippers hung in there, though. That's for damn sure. No Chris Paul. So Booker said, oh, no Chris Paul? Okay, let me go for my best game as an NBA player. 40 points, 15 of 29 shots, obviously, but hey, Paul's not there, so what are you going to do? 13 boards, which he grabbed a couple of them away from Biggs, and 11 assists, and what'd he make, like 28 in a row? No, I don't know. He had that, what was it, 16 in a row? I don't know what it was. But
he went Jordan Clarkson on it.
I mean, he did, dude. It was just like, oh, shit. And overall, as a team, they shot 55%. They're 40% from the three. They had 31 assists to 23. And, you know, Cousins, we had a Cousins, sighting. He got 13
Boogie.
Minutes. Boogie, good for him. He wasn't in there long enough to let a guy score on him when he's got his hands on his knees. But that's a different story. Jackson stepped up. Man was kind of – he only took four shots. Booker deserves all of it, obviously. Ayton played really good. But Payne, in 29 minutes, 11 points, 9 assists. Like, okay, I see you, young fella. Crowder hitting 3 of 7 from threes. Two different guys had two threes off the bench. The Suns had it going, but I thought the Clippers played pretty good considering the Suns had it going like that.
I thought that – I mean, I still think that Phoenix is going to win the series, but I did feel that the momentum they took from winning a game 6 at home with that energy against the Jazz might propel them into a game 1 win, especially without Chris Paul. And up until the last 3 minutes of that game, they really did have a chance. That was a very competitive game. And in my mind, Chris, I was a little bit nervous, and I didn't have like a bet on it, but I'm obviously rooting for the Suns. In my mind, I was like, I wonder if the Suns will slip up a little bit just because you have your point guard, your quarterback, your Tom Brady, your guy isn't on the court. Because that's really
long
where
time off too.
Yeah, I mean, and
they haven't played. We fucking did a show and they didn't play at all. since our last show.
And that's where, especially, and again, I'm not breaking news here, but if you listen to media people or watch games or just anything, like Chris Paul is the clutch. I'm gonna hit a jumper at the end of the game. He literally becomes the quarterback on the court for the team. And so in my head, I was like, well, dude, someone's got to step up. But they really have molded that team thing to where Booker stepped up and Jay Crowder hit a couple of big shots, which he's kind of been doing all year. So I think that was tough for the Clippers. I think that was the best chance they'll have of winning a game. Now, I could be wrong, but I think that that Suns in four quote – from the guy who threw the punches, who was at the game on Booker's dime, which I think
yeah,
is awesome.
Yeah.
Suns and four guy. Why would you
sit there and just keep getting hit when you could just run away? Like, if you got your head down and the dude's beating your head, just move, dude. I couldn't understand that. It's like, dude, get the hell out of there, man.
And sorry, I didn't watch it, but I guess the guy that got beat up had some, like, video on Twitter explaining what had happened. Like, dude, you got smacked. Like, I don't want to hear some weak apology of some sort. You got embarrassed and then you were gonna leave, then you came back, now your butt kicked even more. Like, yeah. I don't want to hear your apology video, but
Suns
and four guy
away.
Good for you. So yeah, I thought that was their best chance. I do think that, well, actually, let me say this differently. There was reports this past week, and as we said before the show, that the Chris Paul stats would be reevaluated today. Yeah. Apparently that's been pushed back. Again, it's reminding me of the the Juan Soto Nationals year where Juan Soto started off baseball COVID last year, where he was like out for the start of the year for like 10 days. But then it turned out he had like, you know, false positives. And there was just really poor miscommunication upon everyone's part. And I'm not saying that Chris Paul is a false positive, but it has that same kind of feeling of, okay, like the dude, we believe he had his shots. And like, why is this so secretive? Like, why is the NBA, and I'm not assuming there's like some shadiness going on, but with a star player being involved, like I feel like Adam Silver or someone should be like saying, okay, here's what's going on. It's like you're leaving a lot of people guessing. And I'm sure Chris Paul probably can't say something because he'd probably get fined. But the whole thing just seems kind of weird. Like, I feel like he should be on the court, or we should know what his status is, or like, you know, is he having to get tested daily, or, you know, is he currently isolated? You know, it makes you wonder, like, why are we not getting any PR for a sport that for the most part normally does a pretty good job, Chris, of letting fans know? Because clearly if Paul is out again for game two, if you're the Clippers and can find a way to steal one, like, we got a series. Like, I still think the Suns are a strong favorite, but, and I don't think Kawhi's coming back because he's got an ACL issue, but it would be nice to know just what the current Chris Paul situation is, whether it's from a sports standpoint, a gambling standpoint, a fan standpoint. It just seems kind of strange that we're really left in the loop on this one for, like I said, for the most part, a sport that does a pretty good job, I think, of handling their PR.
The thing is, though, the COVID stuff's been like this because it's up to the player to say if he's got his vaccine or not, or this or that, or, you know what I mean? So if it was something else, it'd be different. But I think the COVID scenario,
I guess that's fair.
You know what I mean? They've been pretty, I don't know. There haven't been a ton of details unless the guy wants to share. But I hear you. This is just like Chris Paul's luck, though, to, you know. I mean, we still don't know if he was vaccinated because, nobody in the media has talked to him. Well, I mean, I'm sure people in the media have talked to him, but clearly he trusts him, so they're not, you know, they're not going to release information right now. So, but yeah, dude, it would be crazy if he really got it. Here's a little example. A fighter named Teofimo Lopez was supposed to fight last weekend on Saturday, and he got COVID during the week, so they postponed it. Talking about in August, but here's the deal. The dude had asthma. He didn't get vaccinated. He has asthma. He was shadow boxing for like 45 seconds, said he wanted to faint. He had 102 degrees to 2-degree temperature. He said he was just – the next video you saw of him, he had a mask on. He was the only guy in the video. It's like, it's a little too late for that now, dude. How bad is it? A lot of us assume Chris Paul got vaccinated, but that's not a for sure. But we assume he did, but we don't know that for a fact. Obviously, it helps you fight it off more. But it's really just time away, downtime. I mean, he's not playing tomorrow, maybe he'll play tomorrow. But if he doesn't play tomorrow, then all of a sudden you're off for a whole week regardless. You haven't been with the team. You haven't been practicing. They shut you down. So I don't know, man. This is a little shaky. I'm thinking just in general. I still think they can do this because, you know, like you said, Kawhi Leonard is a real – if he comes back, he's not going to be healthy. So, like, not even relatively speaking, it's the playoffs long, crazy season healthy. You know, like, he's good enough to go. Yeah, he'd be good enough to go, but he's not going to be – he can't move. He won't be able to move, right? So – that's why they're off the hook on this one, I'd say. But long-term thinking when they get to the finals, because I have them, winning this series. If Kawhi comes back and is moving better, it could go to game seven. But I just don't believe he'll do that. So, you know, I feel pretty comfortable that they'll win this thing in five or six. But will he be back to 100%? Enough to when they go to the finals potentially, or let's say this thing does tighten up and they need him down the stretch in this one, because like you said, you know, Clippers had a chance to win that game, and I'm pretty sure Mann might get to 20 instead of 9 points or whatever. He didn't shoot that much either. But yeah, I do think the Suns will. Did you say the Suns are going to win it too? Did you do your prediction? We got to shut this thing down.
I'm saying Suns in four. Keep up with the Twitter trend.
All right. Well, I'm going to go five just because the Clippers, I think they've got enough heart now. And maybe Leonard comes back and Paul's not there. Then even a 70% Leonard, maybe that would do it enough or whatever. But, yeah, it is kind of funky. But I don't think that we should worry about the scenario for bettors. You know what I mean? Because that's part of betting. You know what I mean? It is what it is. But yeah, it is. I mean, you got to really wait down the stretch to see if he plays tomorrow if you want to bet, because it could be one of those. Well, we're gonna see. Well, you know, this isn't a. We'll see how he feels. We'll see how he looks. I don't. Really, it's not that because it's not an injury. So I don't know. Why don't you get us out of here, sir?
Thanks as always for listening. Like I said, the past 4 days of basketball were phenomenal. Like that literally was a great night of great weekend of basketball. And hopefully we get three great series to go to wrap up these conference finals along with the NBA championship. So until then, we appreciate the support as always. Thanks for listening. And we'll be back next week breaking down the final four of the NBA playoffs. Have a good day. The boys are out. Peace.